Welcome to part two of our conversation with Heather Lee Landon. Tell me about how, when you went with the intent of getting a PhD here in metaphysical and humanistic studies, and a specialty in paranormal science, you know, that's a very interesting title. I don't know of a lot of real world applicable places where it's like, here's my title, hire me. maybe I'm completely off, but what was your goal in going in that direction? Other than obviously it's a very self-fulfilling, very interesting topic for you.
Right. It was something that I've always wanted to do. And unfortunately they never really offered any PhDs in fields that I was interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And when I found, it was Institute of Metaphysical and Humanistic Science.
Mm-hmm.
It's based out of here in Florida. And Dr. Kelly, he runs it and does all the classes and also all the ongoing training with our graduates. And it was just something that really intrigued me. They had classes in everything from, you know, religious studies to meditation. And they also had, they had cryptozoology and ufology and a whole bunch of different certification programs that you could do outside of the PhD program.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just something I was like, you know what? And in my mind at the time, it was like, nobody was taking me serious.
Yeah.
And even though it's not your 4-year accredited college, it is an accredited through the American Association of Psychics.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, you know, people might take me more serious if I have a PhD.
Sure.
So I signed up, I started studying. It was a lot harder than I ever thought it would be. But I ended up graduating with honors. And ever since I announced that I had that PhD, it's been nonstop for me. And so I do believe that getting it has helped people take me more serious.
So when you're on an airplane and someone's choking and they say, is there a doctor in here? And you can raise, I am. What are you, doctor in metaphysical and humanistic studies with a specialty in paranormal science? Yes, he's choking. Too many... Yeah, he ate the wrapper with the peanuts because they give you 3 peanuts. Now, you're not supposed to eat the wrapper. Can you get it out? How does that work?
Well, I could probably still help because I was a lifeguard for 15
well,
years.
Well, there you go. then that comes into...
That's how I paid for my hobby.
Comes into play, lifeguard. Well, I mean, what an interesting area to study in and spend some time in. What is it, what you expected when you started studying it? Like, what sort of directions do the studies take you on a topic that is so, you know, it's so much conjecture to it. It's so much opinion of it.
It's taken me in a lot of different directions, and there's still some things that, of course, you know, there's some things that they taught that I don't agree with,
mm-hmm.
but it was just a minute section of it. And it was more or less going into the studying with an open mind, which is what people need to do with this field. I see too many people, the more I interact with people, that are just so closed-minded that they don't want to accept what someone else says, mm-hmm. or they don't want to accept that photo they posted is a bug.
Yeah.
They don't want to listen to reason. And then you also have those that, you know, criticize the school that I went to and my degree, telling me I'm a fraud and I'm a fake. And it's like, you know, I don't truly believe in the aspect of paranormality, parunity.
Yeah.
In the essence of, we all just need to get along, mm-hmm. and you got to accept everyone just because they're in this field. But if you give me reason to respect you, you know, I'm going to support you no matter what you do. And I just don't understand why so many people are so catty and petty when it comes to this field. And not even just with my degree, just with everything else.
I think it's a lot of people wanting to have a television show. That's what it comes down to. And they're jealous and mad that they aren't doing it, or they're not being successful at it. And they don't like anybody that is. And the second that you let them, they're like, oh, you become a target. I mean, it's very childish, but it is what it is. I just avoid people.
I'm starting to.
Yeah, I just talk to him on the show and then I'm good. I don't go to conferences. I don't do anything.
Unfortunately, I'm supposed to start going to conferences because of my book and stuff. But yeah.
I was like, I'm good. I'm going to stay home and I'm good. I'm good. I don't need to go. But it's a weird thing that goes on out there with all this. So tell me about, like, I know you say you like to study this, you like to really kind of put a scientific process into this, which I think is very fascinating and great. We're not just, you know, immediately jumping to conclusions because this happened or that happened. Tell me about some of those things that you do. Tell me about some of the studies that you've, you know, conducted to try and find some evidence or try and come back with some interesting answers.
Well, unfortunately, the one thing I don't like about this field is that we cannot use the scientific method mm-hmm. to the true scientific method because, you know, even though you can ask the ghost to act on command, they don't always listen. Mm-hmm. But you could still take a law of averages. So like one experiment that we did was we took the Eddie Plus meter and we set it in the same place, same time, every day for a month. Mm-hmm. And we documented everything from the moon phase to any geothermal activity happening to we also like the ley lines that we were setting it on, the weather. And it was kind of just more or less a way to track to see if the weather affected EMF readings. Mm-hmm. And of course, we noticed that when it was storming, EMF readings went up, of course, with the thunder and lightning in the area. And also we noticed that it was a higher EMF on full moons and a lower EMF on new moons. So it was just whether it was one of those things. It was like whether or not they had anything to do with paranormal activity. It was more or less a way of almost like a starter investigation. Yeah. Because in order for us to understand how paranormal activity can develop, we need to have a better understanding of what natural causes affect the EMFs and the temperatures and all of that stuff, which could also lead us to then determine if down the road, okay, we had higher EMFs on a full moon. We had more paranormal activity on a full moon. We conducted the same experiment in the same location on a new moon. EMFs were down and there was no paranormal activity. Because mm-hmm. we've actually investigated the same location and full moon, tons of activity throughout the whole place. And then closer to the new moon, it was like we felt like we were alone there the whole time we were there.
Is there like a greater amount of energy that's in the atmosphere for them to come through or for us to pick up on it on those sorts of days with the moon?
It's a couple different theories I have, and I need to start researching it. I need to get back to doing it a little bit more. I got so wrapped up in writing the book that I fell behind, but it's I want to research that. Is it the full moon is making it more energetic for them, like you had said, or is it making us more energetic and putting us on a different, you know, how everybody says, oh my goodness, everybody's crazy. It's a full moon. Is it because mm-hmm. we're on a different vibration level and we're finally at the same vibration frequency as the spirits during a full moon more so than we are? And then the other theory I have is, are there parallel dimensions? And is the full moon a time where those dimensions cross over?
Okay. Yeah. No. Let me ask you this, just because the world seems to be rather weird for quite a while. It's almost like we're on constant full moon. I mean, it really does. I mean, I'm just shocked. And I try to figure this out myself just by I do a true crime show as well. And I'm trying to wrap my mind around just the amount of heinous things that I read every day. And I like, has this always been going on everywhere? It's just now that we have the internet and everything and we can share these things so readily. We can hear the worst things of every town every day at our fingertips, where it used to be like you wouldn't hear what was going on in other states half the time unless it was a big, big, big story. But now we hear everything. Is that simply the case? So then it feels to us like there's far worse things going on. Or do you think there has been some sort of like a shift or something in energy or something that is making society just act in such bizarre ways and think in such bizarre ways that I think many of us would have found hard to even contemplate 10, 20 years ago?
Yeah, I think it's partially a little bit of not, I don't really want to say the full moon, but I think it is a combination of the fact that we do have instant access to anything around the world. So even, you know, from the moment that first gunshot goes off somewhere, it's on the internet somewhere. Mm-hmm. And we have more access and more, we're exposed to it more often. And I think because we're exposed to it more often, you do have some of those who might have been sheltered from it that we're more of, you know, I don't really want to say that it's because of the news people are going off the end, but mm-hmm. I think some people might be going a little bit more crazy because they're seeing this more often.
Mm-hmm.
And internally, they're feeling like it's the end of the world and they have nothing better to do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, something I do wonder about some of the cases and stuff that I read about in that show, and that's just nothing to do with the paranormal at all. It's just straight up, you know, dark news. But some of these cases, I mean, it used to be every once in a while you'd get one where it's like, wow, that person really, they're the epitome of evil. Now it's like 1 in 4. I feel like is like, how? I mean, how is this even going on? Like, do you think there is something else at play here within humanity, where literally people are becoming evil in ways far more frequent than they used to? I don't know. I mean, it just feels to me like there is a higher frequency of this going on than there was in the past. Or the case, I know. Obviously, humanity has been capable of doing horrible things forever, but I don't know. I mean, it just with the society that we have that is somewhat civilized, the amount of not even incivility, just utter lack of respect for life in general, just seems to be going out the window, especially with some of these cases of parents harming their children. It's just like, were these people, I don't want to say possessed, but is there something else at play here beyond just really dumb, mean human beings?
It does make you wonder. And it's one of those things where, as far as like, it's people need something to believe in. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to say that they have to believe in a God, but just something. Like, yeah. For me, I personally, I hold everything into nature and my surroundings. Sure. And myself.
Mm-hmm.
To make myself comfortable. And, you know, it's, you just got to have something to hold on to believe to. And I feel a lot of people nowadays are feeling like they've lost any sense of belief, any sense of trust in anything. And because they don't have the comfort of believing in something, that they kind of don't know what else to do.
Mm-hmm. And negativity is also infectious too. I mean, so is positivity. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering in some of these areas, communities, things of that nature, where we see high amounts of just utter depraved behavior to one another, you know, is that negativity feeding off of one another, not just by learned behavior of like, well, this is what we do, but just, I don't know. It just feels like it's so infectious and out of control. I just don't know what to make of it sometimes.
Right. Well, they do say, you know, of course the paranormal, we always say that, you know, like attracts like, negative attracts negative. Mm-hmm. If there's a negative entity, it seems to be attracted to fear or mm-hmm. other negative surroundings, which is why we see an uptick in people who either do have, you know, not to say that mental illness is a negative thing, but the spirits look at it that way, or even demonic entities, as well as those who are, you know, drug and alcohol abusers tend to get more paranormal activity because of they're mm-hmm. exposed to it or more vulnerable to it. And the same thing could be happening in society. It's like, you know, anything, you know, let's say you go to a restaurant, you have a negative experience. You're going to tell 10 of your friends about that negative experience. But if you had a positive experience, you might tell one or two, mm-hmm. and you might only tell them when they ask you, hey, how'd it go?
Sure.
So it seems that negativity, regardless of what it is, mm-hmm. multiplies a lot faster than positivity ever did.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. Within the studies of this, how do you view, obviously, the D word that gets thrown out all the time, like demonic, it's something evil. I tend to believe it's usually just a lot of asshole humans that really pretty much were assholes in life, and they're assholes in death, and you could have considered them probably evil when they were alive. How often do you think there is something that it was not a human? Or have you ever come across something where you thought, this is beyond something a human did or is doing, and there's some other sort of energy here that's infesting this area?
Right. Personally, I've never come across anything like that, and I'm thankful for that.
Mm-hmm.
And just from working with the Warren Foundation and researching and going through some of their cases, I would say it's 1% that it's a true demon.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, you're looking at self-manifestation. Of course, you have curses and hexes, that could, you know, are firm belief in certain countries and cultures, you know, it's a firm belief that that can wreak havoc just as bad as demonic activity can. Mm-hmm. But 9 times out of 10, it is that, you know, asshole human that yeah. just, I was a jerk in life and I'm going to be a jerk, you know, in death.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to something like that, like the curses and hexes, I always find that very interesting because a lot of that doesn't play into our culture here in the States, but other cultures, oh, and depending on the culture you're talking about, some do certainly do have that. But do you believe that that sort of thing exists? Is that mind over matter or do those sort of things truly have power if the person who puts it on somebody believes in it? Or does it require both the person who puts it on somebody and the person who has it to believe in its power?
Right. It is a lot about belief. It's amazing what the mind can do. It is possible for one person to create an egregore, which is a self-manifestation or thought form, and have it, you know, terrorize another person. And that can come in the form of a hex or, you know, a curse. And then you could also, in the cultures that believe in curses, all it takes is for one person to say, "I curse you," and they put the words out into the universe. And then the person who has the curse put on them fears it so much that the energy around them just feeds on that fear and then can develop into something. Mm-hmm. It's amazing what the mind can do. And from the stories I've heard and things I've seen, that it's just unbelievable what can happen.
Just the idea, I mean, let's talk about the, you say egregore, is that the term you used?
Yes.
So something like that, that's something that's kind of self-manifested, if you will, right? Like it's, you're almost like willing somebody. Tell me about what exactly you mean by that.
Okay. Well, two examples are the rake, which is that white little creature seen in forests, mm-hmm. and Slender Man. He was not a real entity until the internet put it out there that there was a Slender Man terrorizing kids. And now all of a sudden there's Slender Man. There's actually, when it comes to Annabelle, there have been people who have been terrorized by the Annabelle from the movie, not the real Annabelle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because everybody believes that what they see in the movie is the what real. The real Annabelle is. And now people are being haunted by her. And there was an experiment done in Canada. And what they did is, it was a group of friends got together every day at the same time for tea. And they would talk about their dearly departed friend, Philip, who is dead, but Philip never existed. And then over time, they started, you know, running recorders in the background and they started doing EVP sessions. And they were actually communicating with a spirit that they had, whether they created him as a thought form or it's another spirit pretending to be Philip, they started getting EVPs from a Philip.
And what is that then? Is that something that is created by people that created another conscious thing? I mean, we can create people. We know that. You know, can we do the same thing, I guess, you know, spiritually or mentally too? I mean, obviously, it's not necessarily a person, but it's something.
Right. Yeah. There's some type of energy there that is now claiming to be Philip. And it's just, I've always been intrigued by that experiment.
Yeah, it's something I wonder about quite a bit, is how often are we haunting ourselves with our own energy? And it's not necessarily, you know, Aunt Edna that, you know, is showing up. It's something mm-hmm. that our anxieties are, all of those emotions that we don't like, all kind of coming together to create, you know, a very negative atmosphere and maybe even sometimes, you know, activity that you can't explain.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, that's very interesting to wrap our mind around, but that's probably for another episode. In your years of doing this, what's one of the biggest things that surprised you that you weren't expecting to learn when you started to really kind of dive into this deeper?
That's a tough one, because it's like when you go into the paranormal field, you're open for about anything to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, just because in the 30 years I had before I actually joined the team, I did most of the behind the scenes research and never really, even though I've had spirits touch me, I never really felt threatened. And we were on this case for a client, and a part of our team had gone in several weeks before us, and they came out saying, oh my goodness, it's a demon, it's this, that, you know, and they had us on high alert already to begin with, which wasn't a good thing. We really shouldn't have known what was happening. We should have gone in with a clean slate to see what was going on. And so we already went in with the negative mindset. And during that investigation, I mean, crazy things were happening. Equipment was dying, you know, your standard stuff, noises, sounds. The room would all of a sudden get darker when you're already in the dark. It's weird. That's one thing I never expected, is sitting in a room for a pitch black room to get darker than it was. So that could be one thing. But one of our investigators, who I did a lot of work with, he all of a sudden his eyes went solid black. I've never seen that before in a human being, and he wasn't himself. And I never really, you hear all the stories of people becoming possessed or taken over, but I'd never really seen it. Mm-hmm. So it was one of those, I don't want to say I didn't believe it,
yeah,
but I didn't really think it was possible. I just thought that was the stories made up to make the paranormal field seem scarier. And then I was counting in my head. I'm like, he has 30 seconds to become himself. Otherwise I'm getting him out of here. And that's if I could get him out of there, because he was well over, you know, 6 feet tall and like twice my size, it felt like. But he all of a sudden snapped to, and he's like, what happened? He completely time slipped, had no clue what was happening, didn't know where he was, what was going on. And then later that same night, this was one of the cases that I had talked about earlier where I had been attacked, and I was cleansing the home, and she had a big picture window over her garden tub. And I was sprinkling some cascaria and sage oil along there to help cleanse and seal the window. And all of a sudden it felt like someone just karate swiped my feet out from underneath me, flew me up in the air. And then I landed on my knees in the tub. And of course I stand up scolding it like it's a 2-year-old child. You know, we don't do that. We don't play that way. That was my first instinct, but I never thought in my wildest dreams that a spirit could actually hurt me, you know, and fly me like that. And then that's where I think, you know, whether it was my grandfather or some other, you know, guardian angel or, you know, just stepped in. Because then after that, the house was bright. I mean, we don't know what happened with the entities because the person who had the home sold it.
Mm-hmm.
So we were never called in by the new owners.
Yeah.
So we don't know what happened from there. But I never really thought that any of those two things could happen, that someone could be taken over like that and their eyes just go black. I mean, if you think about it, if a spirit's going to take you over, why would it change your appearance? And it changed his appearance. You know, it was like his eyes weren't there.
Well, and the eyes going black, that's not even like it's not even a physical possibility. Your eyes, right. There's no way to turn your eyes to make them black. They can go all white. My daughter does that to people in the grocery store all the time and freaks them out. She just walks by and she looks like a zombie and just waves at children and makes them cry. It's great. And she's 9. She's like, look, Hot Pockets. And then the 4-year-old thinks they saw the devil, and it's just my daughter. It's such a weird thing. So, I mean, after you had that experience of the eyes turning black, I mean, what was going through your mind? You know, after you had some time to digest that.
It really opened me up to that, because I knew from walking in that it was a nasty spirit, but it wasn't demonic. Mm-hmm. I knew it wasn't going to be a good investigation from the minute I stepped in the door, even with us being scared beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't, it turned out, you know, even after more research, it turned out that it was a husband, wife, and a child who had all died in the house many, many years prior. And I forgot exactly what happened, but it was just weird. He was being protective of his wife and child.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of just interesting. It still shocks me today, because when you think of someone taking over someone else's body, it's demonic. It's got to be demonic. Only the demon, you know, or the devil can do that. But it was, you know, a human entity that actually did it. I'm still shocked today.
And if you take a moment to think about it, obviously a very scary experience, but if you feel like your home is being invaded by other people, even though they're dead, you're going to do anything to protect your family. And if that means the resources to you involve going and kind of possessing the dude for a little bit, then I guess you do it. if that's going to get them out of there, if that's, you know, in your toolbox of things you can do when you're on the other side, not always the devil, but how can I scare the crap out of, you know, whoever is in here so they leave us alone?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was really interesting, because something told me after the client put their house up for sale was go look at the real estate photos.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm scrolling through the real estate photos, there was one photo that was taken where you can see the big computer screen with a clear shot of the closet doors, reflecting in the computer screen. And in the reflection, you can see what appears to be a shadow of a tall man, a petite woman, and then a small child.
Wow.
Standing there. And I was like, holy crap. And this is on the real estate site. And I'm like, I saw it clear as day once I clicked through and was scrolling through the photos.
Yeah, realtor.com is an interesting site to wander through sometimes. You can find some very interesting photos of very bizarre homes. And I've had a couple over my life where I'm like, that is crazy. And they're just up there. And then nobody really catches it until it's caught. But yeah,
And it's funny because we're actually shopping for a house now that we're in Florida, and I'll just go to, realtor.com or Zillow, and I'll be like looking through the photos and I'm like, nope, not looking at that house.
Can you just kind of get vibes off of the pictures themselves of what's going on?
Exactly.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with Heather Lee Landon. A big thank you to her for being on the show today and sharing her experiences. And thank you to you for supporting the show and keeping us on the air. We would not exist without you. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.